Gwendolyn Mason is a 31-year-old professional violinist and chamber music teacher and is the author of Michaela's Music House, which presents a novel approach to learning a string instrument, particularly the violin. In it, she introduces the four-year-old fictitious character Michaela to take young pupils on a musical journey through 24 lessons, from first violin lesson to first concert. And by appealing to a child's imagination throughout with various characters and stories, the author aims to enable young pupils to learn about their instrument and different playing techniques, gain confidence and enjoy creating music and performing. Gwendolyn Mason, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
So what was your motivation behind this book?
Well, after years of travelling and performing on stage and actually having studied with incredible musicians myself, I would be teaching myself and would find that very gifted young children would come to me, they would start learning, and at some point or other, their parents who might have no musical background might get left behind. So the support that one would have hoped for at home for the children when they were practicing would be there, but the knowledge to guide the student wasn't, and the especially children would get a little bit discouraged and would eventually stop, to my dismay. And I actually wrote this book when I was 21. It was just a skeleton of a book.
Yeah.
And then I left it and I played concerts and did the whole solo violinist, chamber musician thing. And I came across it actually once before I moved to Florence for a year. I found it at the bottom of a shelf that I was emptying and saw it, and I thought, actually, this mightn't be so bad. And I sent it off to a few publishers. And within weeks, I received note, this is fine, expand it, revise it. And so I did. And in doing so, once I started working on it, I realized I would have to take a year out from performing. There was no way I was going to be able to do this and play at the same time. So I took a year out and revised it and worked with incredible artists.
Yes, the illustrations are very appealing, I must say.
Thank you. Yeah. That's done by an Irish artist called Colin McCauchleyuk, who I met in childhood. He's very, very talented. And being a musician himself, knowing me very well, it was very easy to communicate with him what kind of girl Michaela is. And he got it right.
Let's talk a little bit about parent involvement when a child is learning a new instrument. In your opinion, how involved should a parent be? Because, for example, Michaela's mother attends the lessons with her. Is that a good thing?
I personally think it's very encouraging when family of anyone studying a musical instrument is involved, if they can be. The problem very often is that young children especially will show signs of musicality. They'll sing, or they'll clap a lot, or they'll dance around. And parents obviously want to assist their children. But as I said, they might get lost if they don't have the background information. And there's only so far that someone who has no prior musical education can continue to support their children. In my classes, with very young, I tend to encourage at least one parent to be there to witness the lesson, which they actually really enjoy, because through individual lessons, it might be actually the only occasion they get to see their child's learning curve, because parents cannot attend school with their children. Mm. Parents who send their children to sports are obviously not going to be in the room with them, swimming with them or horse riding with them. If they do dancing, there's a clause in a lot of ballet schools that parents are not to go into the studios.
Well, you see, maybe there's a reason for that, in that what if you have a bit of a tricky parent? I'm thinking about this from the teacher's point of view. Is that a factor at all?
I've never had that problem. No, I tend to try to involve parents in any case with it. I mean, there comes a point where I will want to work with a child one-on-one and really be able to focus on their interests.
And the child's independence has grown at that
absolutely.
Stage.
Absolutely. That's actually something that I really, truly believe in. I mean, my incentive when I teach is to try and create independence in a student as soon as possible. Be that through learning to read music well or through using their own imagination so that they can find their own voice. I'm not looking for them to clone mine. Mm. My sound is not something that I would entice them to want to be able to do themselves. It's really
sure.
about themselves
and
finding them.
You mentioned reading music there, which can be tricky. You with your younger pupils, you use colour coding.
That's right.
Yeah, that sounds to me like a good idea. You obviously find it works.
Yeah. With very young children, they may not have a knowledge of the alphabet, or they may not have the capacity to write in their mother tongue yet. And so if they come in and I bombard them with the alphabet and the violin and, left, right hand coordination, arm-hand coordination, all that, that can be very overwhelming. So I find that using basic colours that all children know will help them to understand geographically what they see. And in turn, it also helps the typography of the instrument. If a child knows that on a particular string, the second finger is on that place, and they know it through having seen the number two and that particular colour code, they will be much more inclined to actually play that note, to find that note in tune every time again. And eventually, of course, and this is dependent on each child is different, I will take the colours away and they will just start then learning the alphabet. And in some cases, I've had children who within 4 weeks have learned how to read music, how to play the violin, basically, and how to write the alphabet. So it really depends on each child.
Let's talk about some of your methodology in this book. One of the big things for a violinist is holding the bow properly. So how do you teach that to a young child?
I tend to start with the right hand. I know that there are methods that suggest just, you know, taking the instrument and going for it. I personally would start with the right hand and start just for people to actually become aware of their digits, literally, like, you know, thumb, four fingers. And I've created games to try and work on the flexibility, where I would turn the four fingers and the thumb of the right hand into monkeys who climb up a banana tree, which is the bow. And of course, on the way up, it's very fast. You know, it's really not a problem. If you try this yourself, you know, if you take a pen and try crawling up the pen, you'll find that it's not very difficult to do so with the thumb on the one side and the four fingers on the other side of the pen. Coming down, however, is a bit more of a challenge. And so I'll tell the children, well, of course, coming down is more difficult because, you know, this is a banana tree. These have been monkeys. They've gone to the top. They've eaten the bananas. Now their stomachs are full. So going down is a bit more of a struggle. And from there, actually, then I actually really do get into the actual basic bow hold, which there's various methods to do that, to place the fingers, on the bow. And that's something I would focus on, actually, for the first two or three lessons with someone, so that I really feel they have that. It's become like inherent to how they understand the bow. When they pick it up, that bow hold is there. And from that point on, I introduce the instrument itself. I try to separate left and right hand in the beginning, because it's different parts of the brain. And most children are born with one or two senses more developed than the others. There are children who see the world literally via their eyes. There are children who hear the world. There are children with an incredibly developed sense of smell, for instance. I try to work with whatever senses that are there and use those to develop the ones that are less well-developed, basically. And from that point on, by separating the two and then eventually combining the two, It works, yeah.
After that, it is, of course, getting a good sound from the instrument. And as I say, you use a lot of stories and various characters and images. And I loved the image of the fat fairy that you use in terms of a child creating a good sound. Explain this to us.
Okay. Well, when I work with adult students, I might use some of this imagery, but not necessarily with a fat fairy. But particularly for children, they might come in and they'll be playing away. And they're perfectly strong, but they still have this incredible respect for their instruments. And so they're nearly tentative in the beginning, you know. They hear the sound and it's close to there and like, oh my God, wow, that sounds really loud. And trying to explain to a child that what they hear on the place where they're standing is not necessarily what you'll hear 5 metres away. There's no point in going there, because unless you start recording them, etc., etc. So I introduce the idea of a fat fairy who has just plopped herself down in the middle of the bow. You know, and she's got a big bum and very extravagant clothing. And she's sat down in the very middle of the bow, and the children can actually see through their imaginative eye that the bow, the stick of the bow, has gone down to meet the hairs of the bow. And they see this. And I'm like, okay, now follow that. And I bring that fairy, push her and pull her along the strings. And it's just unbelievable. It works every time. I mean, literally within seconds, you know, there's this big smile on their face and they're pushing and pulling the fairy on their bow. And the sound that comes out is just, at that point, they're no longer trying to get a sound out of the instrument. They're literally taking the sound out of the instrument. Yeah. That's a completely different ballgame.
Let's talk about practicing, because practicing for an awful lot of children is a chore. Do you have a particular method to help children enjoy practicing, look forward to practicing?
Sure. Part of the reason I actually wrote this book when I was 21 already was because, to me, to be very frank, I love my instrument. I love music. I love performing. And that was actually what kept me going in my childhood. The performance element, learning music, interaction with people. I love that. If I hadn't had that, who knows? Practicing can be a chore, definitely. Mm. And it is presented in a rather old-fashioned way in most classes, because there's a huge amount of literature on the topic. There are an enormous amount of good teachers, but not necessarily all the methods out there are relevant to today. Especially not if you consider that parents might be involved in this and have 21st century schedules, you know, very little time. They need to have that 10-minute, 20-minute slot, or however long it is their child is practicing. I mean, I have 8 or 9 year olds who are doing 2-3 hours a day voluntarily. Now, how do you get them to that point?
Yeah.
Voluntarily, like that they're really motivated. I must admit that...
I'm imagining a lot of parents going, how? Tell me.
I do recall that I found practicing sometimes to be tedious, but I was spoiled. I come from a musician's family. And I'm a fourth generation teacher. So obviously in our family, they've gone through this, you know, how to get, you know, the little girl to actually practice. And that was part of the reason I wrote the book. I realized that you can definitely make learning something fun. So for instance, if you observe a child, even at Christmas, you know, they'll get a present. They'll play with the present. Okay, they'll do that for a couple of hours. And then they'll see the box that the present came in, and they'll take the box and they'll start making all kinds of things with the box. And in fact, a child could play all day, leave them to their own devices, and they will just fascinate themselves with the world. Now, if you use the word practice instead of playing, that's a different thing altogether.
Yeah.
So if you can animate a child through stories, through their own imagination, through fantasy, in a controlled manner, in other words, they don't go wild and start running around the room and jumping off walls. That's not the idea. The idea is that they actually realize that they themselves are fascinating, that their own mind is fascinating, and that learning music is another step to get to that. And also, of course, combined with the idea of creating independence in a child, if you give them the tools to amuse themselves, literally, and to allow them to realize that they have a voice on an instrument that is all their own, that works wonders. I mean, it really does become an entirely different a world.
How much teaching are you doing at the moment?
It varies. I have a lot of traveling on at the moment because I do have a lot of concerts. And that year that I took out for the book, and I was catching up on that, you know. I have a private class of students in Switzerland where I spend half my time. And I teach privately in Dublin. And there, I do a lot of master classes. So I'll have particularly older students, you know, the third level students who might visit me in this country or that country, and you know, they might themselves be there, so they'll look me up. But
all right, and I just want to mention before you leave us that you are also programming the forthcoming Carrick Water Music Festival in Carrick and Shannon. This takes place from the 4th to the 9th of August. Give us an idea of who's on the lineup.
With pleasure. Yeah, it's a mix of genres that I've tried to introduce there. Redmond O'Toole and Elizabeth Cooney will be coming to play a beautiful duo programme. And then on Friday, the 7th of August, we're doing what I called a triple bill. We did a double bill last year, so we had to, you know, triple bill this year. And it will feature Emer Mayock, the flautist, and her trio, Tarab, who are a Mediterranean influenced group, Eurodney, who are a very well known nonet based here in Dublin, who I will perform a set with. It's the first time I'll be playing down there. They were like, okay, now it's your third year here, play something. So we'll be doing that.
All right, that's the 4th to the 9th of August, and the link for that is carrickwatermusic.com. Michaela's Music House, The Magic of the Violin by Gwendolyn Mason, can be bought in Eason's and Opus 2. And Gwendolyn, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.